Item on the agenda, consent agenda items. Mr. Watkinson?
We have two consent items on the agenda today. These are projects that were initiated in violation or without the proper permits. We have conducted public interest reviews on both of these, and there had been no objections, and we have coordinated a consent agreement of payment of civil charges with the applicants, and in one case, a contractor. So with that, I'll go over the first item. It's item 3A. It's Saeed Falsafi. He's requesting authorization to retain a 260 linear foot riprap revetment, extending a maximum 6 feet channelward of mean volume.
Mr. Watkinson, can you hold tight? I just committed an error in the vote previously. Just to retract, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to be heard on items 2A and 2B, for the record? This is a public hearing. Thank you. Proceed, Mr. Watkinson.
Saeed Falsafi is requesting authorization to retain a 260 linear foot riprap revetment, extending a maximum of 6 feet channeled of mean low water, impacting 932 square feet of subaqueous bottom adjacent to his property at 835 Herbert Springs Road along the Potomac River in Fairfax County. In this case, the applicant has agreed to pay a civil charge in the amount of $1,800 in lieu of further enforcement action, and staff has recommended approval of a triple permit fee of $300 in acceptance of the civil charge. In this case, back in 2007, Mr. Falsafi had submitted an application for a riprap revetment in his property. And the county, because there was a wetlands involved here, had some questions about the project, was negotiating with Mr. Falsafi over the project, and apparently they did not reach agreement on what needed to be done to finalize that application. And as a result, Fairfax County withdrew the application and inactivated it, and we inactivated our file as well. Well, in 2010, it appears Mr. Falsafi went forward and built the revetment, and it extended through wetlands and portions of it onto state submerged, well, in this case, it would not be state submerged lands of the Potomac River, but into the Potomac River, and we now have jurisdiction for permits in the Potomac River. Mr. Falsafi, in this case, has taken full responsibility for constructing the project over along the shoreline through wetlands and over state submerged lands. The Wetland Board heard this in October. While they did not levy a civil charge, they did assess an in-lieu fee for the compensation of wetlands that was impacted at a rate of $33,852. As I indicated, we've run our public interest review. There's been no objection to the project. It is a revetment that we would have issued recommended approval for, and as a result, we recommend acceptance of the civil charge payment in lieu of further enforcement action.
Mr. Palmer.
You mean me?
No, sir. I thought Mr. Palmer had his hand up.
Mr. Fox had his hand up first, sir.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Fox. Okay. I have a method to my madness, but go ahead. Mr. Fox.
The reason Fairfax got the $33,000 is that's wetlands and that's out of our jurisdiction. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was intertidal, non-vegetated wetlands.
Okay.
I like your train of thought, though. Mr. Palmer.
So this man built this riprap revetment, knowing he needed a permit from us, but without getting it. He just put it up.
Iris, whether or not through the years he thought things had changed or whatnot, I couldn't say, but obviously he applied in 2007. The permits were not issued as a result of some questions about what was proposed and how it was proposed, and that he did go forward. That's obvious in terms of what happened.
How about the contractor? Did he know about this?
It's not quite clear how much the contractor knew. I'll let Dan Bacon, he's processed this, elaborate. But apparently there were several different folks he hired or brought in to put rock along the shoreline, from what I understand. And so there was some bit of confusion on that end. But in this case, like I said, Mr. Falsafi has taken the responsibility.
So Mr. Falsafi pretty much acted as the contractor and had these people brought in as subcontractors? So, Mr. Bacon, come forward, please. Get an answer to the question. Morning, Dan.
What Mr. Falsafi told me is the first contract he hired went under and closed his business, so he never, he finished it, but yet not, didn't finish it. And the second contractor came in there, built his pier. When I came to the place and looked at it, Mr. Falsafi said the first contractor had finished everything. So the second contractor was just for building the pier that was out there, which we gave an NPN letter for.
Okay. Further questions? Dan, do you have a case here today? Do you have any cases before the commission? Come back to the podium, if you will. For the record, Dan has done a great job for the Marine Resources Commission. He'll be leaving us to join the Army Corps of Engineers in North Carolina, I think, after the first of the year. So, Dan, on behalf of the commission, and I'll be talking to you between now and then, we thank you for the good job that you've done. Further questions on item 3A? Mr. Plumlee.
Was the civil penalty or, the in-lieu fee, was that paid?
I believe it was, but I'm not positive.
Mr. Bacon.
The in-lieu fee for Fairfax County was paid, and he also had to do a restoration project on the property itself, and they were all approved.
So that was sort of a mitigation project?
Come forward to come back to the podium. I hate to do it, Dan.
You don't get away that easy.
He paid a $33,000 in lieu fee, and he also had to do an approved restoration project with Julie Bradshaw and the county itself for the wetlands that was actually non-tidal wetlands, but he agreed to do some wetlands restoration to the left side or upstream of his property.
Were those significant? I mean, in terms of size, the remediation or the mitigation?
No, sir. Wasn't significant. It was like 10-foot by 15-foot area that they filled in with some debris and stuff like that. He had to remove it, and then the county required him to replant it with proper vegetation for that area.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Further questions? Tony, I do have one for you. The $1,800, I think it'd be helpful. I know that we use a matrix, that when we have civil charges, that you can advise us that the matrix is based upon X deviation of environmental and like we normally do on the other. So this $1,800, can you explain the rationale for that?
Minimal environmental impact, but maximum deviation in terms of the noncompliance with the permit requirements.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? Anyone in the audience wishes to be heard? Yes, sir. Can you come forward, please? Thank you, Tony. Raise your right hand for me, please. You solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
You state your name for the record, please.
I'm Michael Henready.
Okay.
I'm here for Mr. Falsafi.
Okay.
And to help answer the commission's question about the area, it's 156 square feet that was impacted that we have to revegetate for Fairfax County of the wetlands. And then also one of the issues was the contractor, he did go under. We've been hired, my company's been hired to fix everything with the dock and everything else. And Fairfax County's, all the checks have been written, been accepted by Fairfax County.
Okay.
And, you know, everything has been taken care of. And, you know, Dan Bacon's been a great help. And,
okay. You know, I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't ask you, do you understand as far as the permitting requirements of VMRC in this case and future cases?
Oh, I understand.
Good. Just want to make sure.
I believe the contractor has had that went under had several issues with Richmond and the DPOR. And unfortunately, he's one of those that.
I think that's enough.
Yeah.
Any questions from the gentleman? Thank you, sir. Anyone in the audience wish to be heard on this matter? Not the matters before the commission. Tony, do you have something else? Matters before the commission. Mr. Palmer?
It's 260 feet, it's almost 100 yards. I think an $1,800 fine is way too small. You know, I would think something in the matter of $15,000 or $20,000 would be more appropriate for something this size.
Well, the code limits us to $10,000 for each violation, okay. I believe.
Mr. Watkinson, do you have a comment, or was that going to be your comment?
I was going to just remind the commission about it, and just to say that based on the commission's previous directive, you know, in using the civil charge matrix, you know, we went forward and approached Mr. Falsafi about the civil charge agreement, and that's what we came to. But obviously, we placed these before the commission to, you know, either accept that or decide on something different.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may ask Tony while he's up here, Tony, how long has that matrix been in effect?
Yeah, I can help you.
Okay. Ms. Fox?
The date on the page is May the 25th, 1999.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, in light of that,
further, Mr. Robbins.
I mean, just with respect to this case in front of us, I'm comfortable with staff's recommendation relative to those standards, relative to the existing matrix. And yet, you know, it probably would be helpful to review that, perhaps at the staff level, and come back and have some further dialogue with the commission about the, you know, whether that needs to be updated. Because frankly, you know, if it's 13 years old, we ought to look at it again, I think.
Since we had the authority for the civil charge process, whether that was 99 or before then, it has been updated one time in between in terms of the amounts, but it certainly could probably stand.
I have a correction,
Mr. Fox,
to what I just said. The memo date was 1999, but in the body of the memo, it says that the civil charge matrix was adopted by the commission in May of 1991.
Okay, and so the 99 was the update of the amount.
Okay. When we went from. All right, so I think we need to revisit it. We've done that on a lot of fees and a lot of other things. Mr. I have Mr. Schick, then Mr. Plumlee.
Now, this area of wetlands, is that in wetlands jurisdiction, or was that in the Potomac River, which technically would be our jurisdiction, even though it's not state-owned bottom?
Well, the jurisdiction of the commission would start at low water, as it would for other areas throughout the state. Because the code directs us to consider our jurisdiction in the Potomac as we would for state-owned submerged lands elsewhere in the Commonwealth. So that begins at low water. And the wetland jurisdiction is from low water inland through the intertidal area. And so that's private property. And so that would be the wetland board jurisdiction. It would not be submerged lands.
So the 156 square feet is actually not in our jurisdiction that he replenished, that he...
That's correct.
Okay, so when it comes to the matrix, we're considering the revetment, not the wetlands.
That's correct. It's
okay.
The portion channeled of low water. Okay.
That would make an impact on the environmental side of the matrix.
The same thing too.
If in fact it was something that was disturbed in below the low water line, then that would increase its environmental penalty part.
That's correct. I mean, what we had here was. The revetment spanned both jurisdictions.
Right.
It went through the intertidal area and encroached into state submerged lands up to 6 feet in some areas. I mean, it undulates.
Right.
And so it's that strip channeled of low water that we're really dealing with. Here.
And traditionally, one more thing. Traditionally, when it's a permit that we would have accepted before the fact, that's why it was minimal as far as the environmental factor. But the fact that he knew he was supposed to get a permit and he ignored that, that's why it's the maximum on the other side of the matrix.
That's correct with regard to the major component. Now, the minimal with the environmental, given the conditions along the shoreline, no significant resource values that needed to be avoided in that strip, just channel of low water, and typically a revetment that encroaches through the intertidal
right.
area, depending on the circumstances in state submerged lands, is not unreasonable or unusual.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Plumlee, then a comment by Council, Mr. Kugelman.
I just want to be clear on the in lieu fee that was paid, the $33,000, that would have been paid no matter what, had he received his permit in the appropriate manner prior to construction, that would have been the general required in lieu fee that he would have had to have paid for his project.
That's my understanding. In Fairfax, they've adopted us in lieu fee amounts based on square footage and the type of wetlands, whether or not they assessed it any higher because after the fact, again, I'd ask Dan to comment, but I don't recall.
I just want to be, because the point I'm think is needs to be made is that up until this point, he's not been assessed any civil charge at all for not going forward and obtaining the permit.
That,
in advance.
My understanding is the local government or local wetland board did not not assess a civil charge other than and but.
Mr. Bacon?
You're absolutely correct. The $33,000 approximately would have been paid for the placement of the riprap in non-vegetated wetlands, which they charged $28 a square foot in Fairfax. And they also made him charge the application fee, which was, I think, $600 at the time. They made him pay for that and then the in lieu fee for the encroachment.
Thank you.
Mr. Kugelman.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Just wanted to invite the board's attention to, the commission's attention to the fact that once we put something in place like a matrix for assessing a civil fee, to deviate from that implicates due process violations because that's the way we always do things. And without giving the person notice an opportunity to be heard on the deviation, and then suddenly just doing a deviation without having anything more than a, gee, I think it ought to be more than this because it seems so egregious, when we have an objective way of doing it, could expose the commission to a challenge to that excessive fee. So I'm just bringing that to the board's attention so that the next time something like that comes up, we understand there's a constitutional constraint, but even so, it's my understanding that staff is going to review the matrix and maybe charges could be updated to have a little bit more teeth in light of current.
So that I'm clear, counsel, the bottom line is, with the person's expectation based on dialogue with staff and what the established matrix is, we can proceed today under what has been proffered as the $1,800 civil charge, or we can remove this from the page 3 docket, put it on the page 1 docket, and have a full hearing before the commission. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Schick?
I'd like to move that we go ahead and approve 3A as staff recommended. I don't want to begin to you know, second guess why the Wetlands Board of Fairfax County did not want to pursue civil charges. That's their jurisdiction and their right to pursue that. You know, based on history, this is the maximum that we've charged in situations where the environmental impact is minimal, I would have liked to have seen more. I just don't like to see people, you know, just go ahead and get forgiveness, you know, instead of permission first. That's always been our pet peeve here with these types of things. But this is the maximum that we've done in the past. So I'd like to go ahead and go forward. And then I'd be more than happy to work with staff if we want to try to revisit some of these structures. I know that we only have a maximum. I guess that's set by code, though.
That is.
So that kind of, the matrix starts at a top and then works its way down, so I don't know how much more we can do. But
okay. Is there a second to that motion? Second by Mr. Robbins. Now discussion on that motion. I'm sorry, did you second Mr. Robbins?
I did second, okay. And just had a comment.
Yes, sir.
You know, I appreciate the fact that the staff's going to reevaluate the matrix. I think we'll benefit from that. Historically, we have viewed the matrix as essentially as guidelines, but in this case, since this is a page 3 item, the applicant has already consented to this fee, and that's an important step in the process.
Yes.
So I do support moving forward with this today, and again, I think we'll benefit from some more discussion about reviewing that matrix and how the civil charges are levied in the future.
All right. Further discussion, Mr. Plumlee?
Yeah, I think I agree that I'd prefer to move forward with it instead of holding a full hearing on this issue for this gentleman. But at the same time, I think we want to make the point that he went before the Wetlands Board. They asked him to modify this. So I'm not sure they would have approved what he ultimately did. It's not clear from the record. It's very difficult to tell.
Yes, sir.
But obviously, with the matrix being what it is, our hands are tied with, I think, legally, that we need to hold steady with the matrix. But if there's a way to modify the matrix to recognize something, the facts appear to be that it was pretty egregious. He went there for approval, was told to modify it, then he didn't go back for approval and did what he wanted. And that's a pretty egregious setup. And I'd like there to be some more flexibility within the matrix to do something more in the way of punishment other than $1,800 and the in-lieu fee, which he had to pay anyway.
Okay. Sounds good. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? No, by Mr. Palmer. In light of that, Tony, what I'd like to do is I would like to Kyle, are you still chairman of the Habitat Committee?
Yes.
I'd like to get the Habitat Committee back together as soon as practicable, and I would also, if he would agree to, ask Mr. Plumlee to attend that meeting as well. Perhaps so we can look at these matrix again and come up with not only the matrix adjustment, but a caveat in there that indicates that this is a guideline, as it is for the active cases that come before the commission for consideration, and that the understanding that it is a sliding scale.
Well, as part of the Habitat Committee, it has been a couple of years since we have had a case or a circumstance where we needed to meet.
Good.
So I guess.
Perfect timing.
I think, you know, obviously I'd have to contact all of the members to make sure they're still interested. If not, I'll get with you about opportunities.
We will have a meeting within the next 45 days. Well, 60 days, the holidays are coming, so we'll have it within 60 days. Next item on the agenda is item 3B, Shields Properties.
Yes, sir. Another after-the-fact situation. For the record, Shields Properties, LLC, is requesting an after-the-fact permit modification to their 45-foot-long by 10-foot-wide L-head pier that was constructed 3.9 feet further channelward than authorized by their permit, adjacent to their property along Assateague Channel near the mouth of Sheepshead Creek at 7536 East Side Road in the town of Chincoteague. In this case, the applicant and contractor have both agreed to pay a civil charge in the amount of $600 each in lieu of further enforcement action, and staff is recommending approval and acceptance of the civil charge proposed. Just a little background in this case. This is a situation where we did issue a permit for the pier replacement. Because of the location of the pier relative to the Sheepshead Channel offshore, we specifically indicated in the permit document that they needed to stay 30 feet from the existing bulkhead. I think there was some bulkhead work done at the property, and the pier was constructed, and it was constructed, as indicated here, 3.9 feet further channelward than the original bulkhead at the site. So obviously deviated from the specific directions in the permit document. While 3.9 feet may not seem a lot, we were concerned about the channel proximity in this area. We got the found out about the violation, issued a notice to comply. The Shields Properties elected to submit an after-the-fact to retain what they had built, so we subjected it to a public interest review, took a look at the proximity to the channel, other structures nearby, and concluded that it really did not impact navigation in Sheepshead Creek. Just as a little bit of a complicating matter here, after the pier was built, the neighbor property changed hands. The neighbor originally brought up concerns about riparian areas and protested the revision. They actually hired a engineering company to look at what they thought the riparian boundaries might be. That survey, while it was not did not go to court, was never approved by the court, indicated that the pier was just within the Shields property's riparian area. So the objection from the neighbor was withdrawn to the modification. And so as a result, we looked at this, determined that since there was not a navigation problem, it was appropriate to permit the extension of the pier as it was built. In this case, it seems that the permit was clear, that the specific amount of encroachment was specified, and the Shields Properties should have known, but there was some complicating factors with regard to reconstruction of the bulkhead. And in this case, the contractor should have had the permit documents and known what it was. And as a result, they've both agreed to the civil charge. In this case, we think the environmental impact is minimal. And as a result of the amount of the encroachment, we thought it was a minor deviation. So as a result, we recommended the $600, and they accepted it for both the contractor and the property owner.
Questions of Mr. Watkinson? Mr. Tankard?
Do you have any history with the contractor, and who was the contractor here?
It was a Mr. Britton. Grandson of another contractor named Mr. Britton. I think he's been in the business a little while, but just sort of getting started.
And like I said, he agreed to a civil charge as well.
So I guess my follow-up question was, do you think he was really aware of what he was doing, or was this a mistake that was made and as really a mistake?
I'm not sure I could fairly answer that. I could ask Hank to elaborate. He dealt with this. But in this case, the point was there were some specific dimensions in the permit for the encroachment because of the proximity to the channel, and we thought that was an important point and would have hoped the contractor would have realized that in building it as the permit required.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. May I follow up to that? What tolerance do we normally provide as far as overage is concerned in a compliance check?
Well, historically, when we started reviewing compliance back in the 90s to get a sense of how much was in compliance, moderate compliance, and out of compliance, we did assign a figure of 10%. If something stayed within 10% of the authorized encroachment, then it would be considered moderate compliance, and we wouldn't need to take, you know, further action on it.
So was this such a project?
This is right at that 10%, I believe. It's close.
So the real problem here is not necessarily the aggregate overage, but it is the fact that the length of it encroached near the navigation channel. That was an initial concern of the permit condition.
Near the navigation channel and the fact that we...
But otherwise, it still would have been within pretty close to 10%. I just thought I'd throw that out for
what it's worth. I appreciate that.
What it's worth.
I understand. It sounds like it's a pretty tight configuration, the channel. I'm not familiar with the channel.
It's relatively close. I mean, it's a sheep's head. It's not a big, you know, wide, huge water body. And because of the traffic in there, we just thought that was important to err on the side of caution with the encroachment.
The old judge in circuit court over in Isle of Wight, he used to very, very remind us, you know, what distances are, and they would ask witnesses to, you know, how far was a person, and they'd say 50 feet. Well, how far is 50 feet? Is it the back of the wall? Is it that 3.9 is from here to maybe just a little bit over the bench, for what it's worth, and it's Christmas. Further questions? Don't tell them, Mr. Palmer. Anyone in the audience wish to be heard? If not, the matter's before the commission. Mr. Schick.
Move we approve 3B is read by staff.
Motion made by Mr. Schick, seconded by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Tony. Thank the commission.